You are listening to episode 126, Music Messaging and Mobile Printing.
Episode 126 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is February the 23rd, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my gold medal-winning brother, James Furlough.
Are those still going on?
No, tonight was the closing ceremony.
Okay.
The reason I bring it up is because, you know, if you hadn't won it by now, it was too late.
How'd the U.S. do?
I don't know.
Do we meet expectations, exceed them?
Well, one of our biggest tricks is because we basically pay for everything. We, will oftentimes throw in a couple of new sports that we've got kids that are, super excellent at because they've been spending their whole life making up this sport, and nobody in the rest of the world has ever tried it before. And we usually dominate those sports. It's how we get, half of our medals. And then we do really well and, you know, we're finalists and the rest of them. And then, we end up pretty well. But honestly, I don't actually follow the winter sports that much, the Winter Olympics that much. I've never been a huge Winter Olympics fan, whereas, the Summer Olympics, I'm just I love it. I can't get enough of all the different sports. But
You're the normal person there. American, I should say.
It's true. I love some of the obscure sports, go horseback riding. Curling, the shooting ones, the ones you're just what? Why did people come up with these? I don't get it.
I ask that question all the time.
Yeah, those are the best sports. But
this is where I felt about Snapchat. How did they come up with this? Why?
Yeah, exactly.
Who was what I really need? I need a picture that just disappears after 3 seconds. That's what's missing in my life. Let's make that app.
Yeah. Or a free text messaging app. Why didn't I think of that one? That one seems like a really straightforward one to come up with.
Perhaps. Oh, well.
But you know what? This week, every week, we're not going to talk about the Olympics all show long. Instead, we're going to be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they are developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
Yes, I work for HP, but I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions, which is really, really important this week, so remember that.
Okay. Consider it remembered. If you want to follow us throughout the week, there's plenty of opportunities to do that. You can see all sorts of cool pictures and tweets from all around the globe at places like my Twitter, which is at Matthew D. Furlough, or my Instagram, which is NextWiggin4. Boom.
I am at James Furlough on Twitter and JamesFurlough.com.
Nice. And if you want to get any clicks, links, videos, show cuts, the entire show, the podcast, YouTube, whatever you want, man. If you want something from the show and you don't know where to get it, just go to the Google and then type into the Google search bar, Furlough Bros. That'll bring you to furloughbros.com. That's our website. And say it, don't spray it. We got all sorts of great stuff, all the articles we talk about during the week and everything else. So go check her out, email it to your friends, post it to Facebook. It's awesome. It's not illegal, or you can post links without any copyright infringement. You just can't host images without risking it. So, host stuff. So you can share that link with everybody and there's no risks involved. You're legally in the clear. I mean, it's a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned.
Makes sense to me.
I know.
I'm going to start off with sharing a little bit about what I've been working on for, how long has it been now? Over a year with HP. And I haven't been allowed to talk about it, but I finally can.
Okay.
Which is why It's really, really important that you remember that I work for HP. I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. And I'm probably falling upon a gray line here, but we'll try.
Okay, okay. Can we have a secret off the air meeting right now, James?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How nice should I be right now?
pretty nice. Be honest. I want you to be honest, okay? That's what the show is about.
I will not be intentionally inflammatory as I have been in the past. I will be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, I have sunk a little bit of my life into this, so I would appreciate if you're, you know, civil about it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So anyways, and this is kind of cool. You listeners are going to get a little bit of a backstory, I think, at least my perspective of the story. That's clearly not the whole thing. But my job within HP, my normal job within HP, is to figure out how many HP laserjet printers there are in the world and produce reports that are related to that, amongst other things. But that's a big part of what I do. And so HP had this product idea, and it required knowing how many laserjet printers there were in the world. And since they wanted to know that, I was the guy that they came to. And I gave them the answer. And then at that time, they were like, hey, you know what? We've got this other product that we're working on, which is why we need the information. And we were wondering if you were interested in kind of doing a side thing, a development opportunity piece. And so not really knowing what I was getting myself into, I said yes. And it was a pretty cool ride. And so this last – I guess it was a week ago now – HP finally unveiled what it is. It is the HP 1200W NFC wireless mobile print accessory.
Oh baby!
Which I got to help name. So that's kind of cool.
That is kind of cool.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. I mean, and they name it just like you would name anything else, right? We all kind of sit around in a meeting and going like, "What do you think about the word?" What were some? We had some crazy ones where, you know, like, we were literally going on a thesaurus to figure out how many different ways can you say accessory, and, you know, like, what sounds appropriate? What is the essence of this product? And, yeah, it was pretty funny. You know, like, okay, is there another way to say mobile? We're interested in the wireless. It has an NFC component to it. Do we want to get that in there? And then the best part is the numbering system. It's kind of like, what is this number? And you know, and like trying to think through the logic of not necessarily – A, you're looking at other products that are being sold and what are their numbers and represent. And then also thinking like, okay, if we're ever going to redo this or come up with another, you know, a next generation of it, what number do we want that to be? And yeah, it was an interesting insight. Some of it, like I said, it works exactly the way that you would expect it to. There isn't some person on high coming down saying, you shall name it this way. It really is a group of people going, I don't know what makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so what it is, it's this mobile printing accessory. And I have in my hot little hands a dev version. Okay, so this is not the real thing. This is a dev version. It actually looks different. It looks better, actually.
The dev?
But it's this little box. It's this little box right here. The shape is right. But it actually has a little HP Joule and some other stuff.
Okay.
But how big would you say this was? It's a little bit bigger than a deck of cards, right?
Yeah, about that. Yeah, a deck of cards sounds
like my iPhone, shorter than an iPhone, thicker, maybe twice as thick as an iPhone, same width as an iPhone-ish. So that's about the size of it. And so it's actually pretty cool. So what you do is, let's say that you've got a LaserJet printer. You know, which you might in your office. You probably personally don't have one, but you might have one in your office. I don't know. Do you guys got a LaserJet printer in your office?
LaserJet? I think we do have a LaserJet somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds about right. You don't have to tell me what brand it is. It's okay.
I don't know.
That's fair. But what we know is that there are a lot of printers out there in the world where you can't print to it from your phone. My guess is that's probably the case with your printer.
That would be the case of most of our printers, yes.
Yes, yes.
We actually went out and bought a special one that has AirPrint.
AirPrint
compatible, and nobody uses it.
Well, there you go.
My boss thinks it's really cool.
I'm sure that it is. And the issue is that a lot of people don't want to go out and buy a whole new printer because it does – because in some ways it becomes a specialty printer. That could become your issue there like that. And so we had a solution where – we had a lot of printers out there where that was the case. And clearly the world is heading in a mobile direction, you know?
Yeah.
And people are bringing these devices into their workplace, and they'd like to be able to fully use them, which includes printing. And you know, companies, like I said, didn't want to necessarily go out and, you know, revamp their entire fleet. So HP saw an opportunity there and invested again in this device, this mobile print accessory, where essentially you take it and you do plug it in power to the wall, and then you take take a USB and you plug it into the back of the printer,
mm-hmm.
and now your phone or your tablet or even your laptop will then see this as if it were a printer, can send the print job to it, and it, you know, because it's connected USB to your LaserJet, will actually print to it. And so so that's what they created, and it's on sale for $69.99, which is, in my opinion, a great price, whereas you go, hey, for $70 you can, you know, you can augment your printer, get an accessory for it. We might have thrown around the word augmenter, probably not, but it sounds like we could have. It starts with an A, why not? And, and you know, and you add, and so it adds a ton of stuff to it. So it adds AirPrint to it. You can, like I said, you can print to it from your laptops. You can print to it using an Android phone, even the Windows phone. And it also has NFC built into it because there are a few Android phones that have NFC. And so, which is pretty cool because you just like take your device and you just like tap it against it and it sends it the print job, which is pretty cool. And so again, it's this idea of this product that I've been working on is it's launched, which is exciting. And it's something that just – a lot of businesses, like you said, are looking for some sort of solution and are kind of annoyed that they can't print from their devices. And so we made
it. I'm going to say, I think what's interesting here is that we're done with the commercial. No, just kidding.
Hey, I'll admit it. I work for HP, so I clearly have enough. I've worked on this particular project.
You know, I do. It's funny. I'm kidding. Actually, I understand it. You're proud. It's cool. But what I think is interesting, kind of as a broader topic, is that whole the wired to wireless conversion device. It's like this is very similar, I feel, in automation to like, what's what I'm looking for? Categorically, it's very similar to like what you would get for like replacements for your light fixtures or your light switches. That now I want to be able to control it from my phone, or I want outlets that I can control from my phone, or I want locking mechanisms, or I want sprinklers, home automation things. These are the same category of devices or light bulbs that you can whatever things that I want to add wireless functionality to something that already exists. There's already a well built out. Very expensive, very holistically, designed ecosystem, and I want to leverage what already exists and just add wirelessness to it. And I think that's a huge product category moving forward in the next 10 to 15 years. And there's just going to get more and more and more, of those types of devices, and they're all about upgrading what already exists for an affordable amount of money. And I think for me personally, I've decided I think that for a single upgraded unit of something where it's like I've got, to me, it's like, this does everything it's supposed to do. It sounds really cool. It sounds like it does it all right. The only thing you wish you could do that differently, and I understand why this is like, from an engineering perspective, is completely and not applicable, but you wish you could have it powered off of the printers. But since all the printers have different power sources, yeah.
So that's interesting about that, that you bring that up. It's just, yeah, the USB on the back of the printer are just not designed for that.
Yeah.
Except, and that's for the laser jets, except there are two office jet printers that it works with, the Office Jet 100 and 150, which are mobile printers, which have you seen our mom's printer?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of, I can't remember if it's the 100 or the 150. I think it's the 150. And so those are designed to be mobile, but they are like huge battery packs on the back of them.
Right.
What's cool about that one is you can power it through USB. And so it actually has two USB ports on the back of it.
Oh, yeah.
And so one of them, you know, sends the data to the printer, and the other one acts as the power source.
Yeah.
So you can do it on the office jet. With the laser jets, it's just kind of like they're not.
Yeah,
you know, they're never designed to be mobile, so
it's sort of like it's the same thing that happens with the Chromecast. I mean, it's just you need another power source. It's another plug in your outlet. Get a strip. It's not a big deal. It's just something that, you know, you wish we could figure out some way to, or it's one of those design features that, for whatever reason, as engineers, we never really thought you need power output from accessories. You know, it's like everything was thought of as you'd have the computer as the power source, and it would power everything. And so accessories, we started to develop accessories that would be powered off of USB. It never occurred to us that, you know, some accessories would be cool if they could power the controllers off of it. You know, could the brains get so small that it would be useful to have not just communication over USB, but, you know, power going the other direction. And so it's one of those things where, yeah, that's, you know, but like I said, that's not that big of a deal. But to me, unfortunately, I mean, well, I don't own a printer, and I haven't for half a decade. So it's hard for me to say, I'm not going to, you know, I think it's unfair for me to say, I'm not going to go to buy one because it's too expensive. Because, you know, like,
not the target customer.
Exactly. But I ask the question to myself, it's like, you know, the reason why I draw the analogy of like light switches and stuff, it's like, what would it cost me? What is my magic price point? Because I've realized that the $70 price point is the current price point that everybody tries to hit, about $70 to implement a new system, right? If you get like the, if you get most LED light bulbs with Wi-Fi built in or some sort of Bluetooth for control, those are generally they're like about $70. You know, your Locatron type things, those are about $70. You know,
that's
like
a little more than 70, but
yeah. Well, but I mean, yeah, but a lot of these types of devices, where they're, you know, they're taking old things, you know, and like 70 is about as low as it gets. And it's funny to me, I think, you know, and this is just free advice from me to you and your team, James, free of charge.
Appreciate it.
If you could get it down to about $20, I think that's when people are going to start going crazy for them. I think that's a realistic number. I think it's going to take quite a few years. And this is just generally for the market in you know, at large, that, you know, these kind of upgradable things. And I think something has to happen with Wi-Fi, the cost of Wi-Fi chips, and Bluetooth chips, really and truly, to bring them down to a price point where, you know, you can sell an entire thing for $20. But, you know, if you could get there, you know, that and if we could do that, man, you could have a real tidal wave of change, because suddenly, you know, you don't mind buying five for $100 and you'll start to.
Well, you know. And I think, you know, and this is an example of what I would call transition devices. Right. Where, you know, I'm hopefully it's not a secret that, you know, we are going to sell these things for the next 20 years. You know, eventually, I mean, I don't know the exact plans. That's not true, but I'm not telling them. But, you know, you know, this is the type of thing where eventually they're going to build them into the printers. You know, I don't know the exact timing, I should say, on that. Because, you know, it can be, and it's something that is useful. You know, it's interesting that you were talking about, you know, the $20 price point. And, we couldn't hit it if we wanted to.
Yeah.
We wanted to, let me put it that way. You know, for the exact reason that you said, right? At $20, it's a no-brainer.
Right.
But it was one of those where, we couldn't physically do it, and so, you know, there's that. And but then B, it was really interesting, is you then start to get into that, you know, the consumer, the customer, you type of people. And you just sit there and go, yeah, we could – if we could hit that price point, sure, we could do it, but people still wouldn't buy it.
Right.
Because there are those people who were like, well, we're not investing in printers. And so, you know, they're like, ah, we'll figure it out a different way. And so, which is another issue that HP is working through. I mean, there's clearly a cultural shift going through there, and we've got responses to it. And I think if HP was – and again, this is kind of stuff I don't know the answer to, and I don't represent HP, but I think if you were to ask, you know, some of those managers and you know, some of those upper dudes, and, you know, just be real with them, they'd be like, they don't know where HP and printing is going to be 20, 30 years from now.
Right.
We're not sure. I do know that printing is going to still be very relevant 10 years from now. Is it going to be as big of a business as it is right now? I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, which I do think about that.
Right.
But I think this is a cool device. And I think, you know, to get back on, you know, on talking about how awesome HP is, I think what's cool about this is that it shows, A, we didn't just sell you a printer and we forgot about you. We continue to think about you and your needs. And B, this was a pretty cool, innovative product. I mean, if you were paying attention, we weren't working on this for very long. You know, this isn't something that was a 5-year development cycle. It was something where, I don't know, a year and a half ago, we recognized, which one could argue, wow, you didn't recognize it until a year and a half ago. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, a year and a half ago, we suddenly went, you know what? We could make an accessory. We can meet these needs. Let's make one.
Right.
And recognize that it needed to happen sooner rather than later. And HP did a great job of just pulling resources from all over the organization to make it happen. And I think that's just an important story that HP probably doesn't tell for certain reasons. But, you know, to just put it out there, look, HP can do innovative things. It can be scrappy if needed. And on some days it sure felt that way. And it was kind of cool because it was like being within a mini startup inside of a huge behemoth of an organization.
Okay.
And you know, which was fun, but go ahead.
One last thought.
Yeah.
You guys didn't build support for any Brother or Canon printers? Now that I think would have been a tour de force. Just make it de facto, you know. And it's I don't know exactly how it works, but I'm guessing what it has. It has some sort of a system on a chip inside of it that runs Linux and that operates that has the drivers for the printers, and it has, you know, the different wireless support things and some sort of a basic, you know, and the operating system is a modified Linux thing that, you know, it runs on, so it just kind of automatically does all that. That's my guess.
My eyes always glazed over during those conversations. So
yeah,
I'm a marketer. Okay, let's not stretch too far.
Okay, fair enough.
You're probably right. I just wonder
how hard
sounds
it would
right.
be. I'm gonna say, I wonder how hard it would be to grab the.
So here's what I can tell you, and again, I think this says something cool about HP. We probably could have, would be my guess. We could have supported all those printers.
Sure, you could have.
But HP does have a standard for quality, and that we try to meet. And, you know, we're not perfect. I'll admit it. And but we try very hard. And so, you know, on this page, we've got a list of every single printer that it works with. Okay, and it's a substantial list, in
it is true,
my yeah. opinion. And for every single one of those printers, they went through a very rigorous testing process, you know, to make sure they would work. I should know because I helped to coordinate getting the printers across the globe to do all the testing, and which is kind of cool to be like, whoa, there's like HP, like this is crazy, man. They've got like a room just full of, they've got like, yeah, two or three of every single printer they've ever made. Just, yeah. You never know, we might want to test them.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. And so you're just like, can I get one of those and one of those and one of those? Can we send that to California? And yeah it's just like, it's kind of cool.
That's cool.
And so anyways, so they tested all of them, right? And
yeah.
And you know, I'm part of the decision, and that's not free to
no,
do
it's
that
not.
Testing. That takes resources to do it, sure. And time. And again, there was, hey, we want to get this out sooner rather than later. And so it was one of those where we were like, are we really going to go out and try to buy every single Brother and other dumb companies' printers? And you know, and I was like, are we really going to do that? And try to figure out how to make it work to the standard that we have set for this. I mean, because that's one of the things that you got to understand, right? Is this is like, for an example, it's AirPrint certified,
right?
Which, you know, who that means, who we had to work with.
Yeah, Apple's a little bit picky about that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and they had, you know, and they have very, very high standards for how stuff works, and you know, and they wanted to see all of our testing and know that we were like, yeah, the user experience will be good. And so I know one of the decisions was made to sit there and say, you know what? No, it would be cool. It would send a cool message to say, yeah, it works with everything, but we can't guarantee that. And Apple wouldn't let us get away with it. We wouldn't let us get away with it. And we don't have the resources to, you know, to find out for sure. And so that's one of the reasons that we went with HP only. There are, of course, other side benefits that we liked. You know, one of our new mantras is better together with HP. So I think on one of my products lines that shows how it works, we've got like, it's an HP Chromebook printing to the HP mobile print accessory, which is printing, you know, to the HP LaserJet. Like, yeah, it's better together. That's right.
Mm.
And so, you know, which is nice, but, but yeah, so that's what I've been working on for the last, I don't know, whatever it is. It's not a year and a half. That's too long. But it's definitely been over a year.
That's cool.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
I recommend checking it out. You know, obviously if you're an individual, it probably doesn't make sense to buy, I will admit it. But, you know, if you're a small to medium-sized business and you just love listening to this podcast, or you work for one of those and it annoys you that you can't print to your printer, you should check it out. Well, I'll link to it in the podcast, of course, because like we do with every single thing that we talk about. And, yeah.
Sounds good. So, did you hear about the speaking of wireless stuff, did you hear about the Apple bug that kind of surfaced this week? Caused a little bit of a firestorm with
you know, I got an update that I've ignored it so far on my phone. Is it related
to that? You probably shouldn't ignore that one. That one's kind of an important one. It's actually, and not only should you not ignore it, I would recommend, it is recommended, I should say, that you actually do the, you do the update, but most importantly, you do it over a secure, known internet connection. Don't go outside.
Okay, I'm on one right now.
Because
right now,
it's funny. I just looked at my phone and I decided to do it. It's mine too. I'm downloading it right now, and I got 1 minute remaining. Of course, Wait a second. My internet connection is pretty good. Before you get too carried away, is this gonna crash the show?
Yeah, good call. I'll win.
Yeah.
Good call.
Basically what happens is it's a relatively small update because it turns out it was a relatively small problem, But what somebody discovered was that the SSL, which is this secure, what does SSL stand for?
Oh, I know what that means.
What does it stand for, James? What does it mean?
I don't remember. It's something secure and encrypted awesomeness. I don't know.
It is the secure.
It's used on website stuff a lot.
Ding. It is the secure sockets layer. It's effectively
It's
the predecessor to the transport layer secure. No. Where'd the word go? It has to do with the transport security layer. It's basically what certifies that a website has a safe communication link back and forth between two things. So like when you do bank transactions, you'll see the little little certificate in the upper corner of your browser. It'll say SSL.
Yep, yep.
And there's a communication protocol that basically makes sure nobody's eavesdropping. So like bank, if you like in banks, you want to make sure you have that so that you're not sending all your bank information back and forth over an unsecure line that people can eavesdrop on. But it also prevents people from injecting packets into your stream and, sending you data that you're not supposed to get into your phone to the back door.
I use it on one of my websites.
Perfect. That's good. And if you need SSL or you're supposed to be using it and you don't have it and you don't realize it, that can be a big problem. And turns out basically nobody's had it on their iPhone for a little while.
What's Johnny Ives doing?
This wasn't Johnny Ives.
Falling asleep at the helm.
I don't think this was Johnny Ives' fault in particular.
Is he not in charge of iOS?
I guess, yeah, but... and they said that they... Yeah. Security research is pretty interesting. Like, they basically said there's two types of bugs that happen. There are, like... where's the phrase? One second. That was loud. But I can't find it. But there's like two kinds of bugs that when you have a flaw in your program, there are the bugs where it's like, it's really elusive and it has to do with something that you're doing somewhere and it's affecting this and it's affecting that and it's affecting this, it's affecting that. And it's just kind of like, it can take a long time to sort through where the problem is. And oftentimes it's a problem in like just the logic of how you work through how the machine's supposed to work. And it acts in an unpredictable manner. But then there's this other kind of problem, which is like it's okay if you make this mistake as a sophomore computer science major, but it's not okay if you make this mistake as a junior computer science major. This bug falls into the second category. and basically what they said was there's this part of the code that they it's funny that they show the code right here, but it's basically like the actual chunk of code that does the SSL security, check. It has an if then statements. So if there's an error, it says go to fail, which bypasses the code. And then if there's a different error, then it says go to fail. And then there's a bypass and bypasses it. And then there's supposed to be another statement that says if there's a different type of error, go to fail. Well, after that second if, there's a second, if go to fail, and then if this happens, then go to fail. Then there's just a line that says go to fail, and it's a typo. It's just a copy repeat. But because that's there, sandwiches between the ifs, if you're a programmer and you look at it, you look at it for 10 seconds, and you realize, oh my gosh. Basically, right in the middle of the code, before they get to executing the code, they tell you, just skip the code. And
oops.
Never gets around
so
to
it. General programming principle is if you're doing an if statement and the then statement is just one line, you don't need brackets for it.
Correct.
It knows to execute the one line, and it moves on. If it's going to be multiple lines, brackets are required. It looks like they did not use brackets, but one of them had more than one line.
Which causes
an error.
Yeah, and it's just one of those, like, you know, yeah, it's the sort of
thing. So what happens is it checks the if, you know, and if the first one's if it was true, it would go to fail, right?
Right.
But if it's false, it's like, all right, now let's do the next check. And so it does the next check, if. And if that's true, it would fail. Or if it's false, it says, okay, let's do the next check. And there's a third one that it's supposed to get to. But the problem is that it, you know, even if, you know, if it goes, if it's false, move on. If it's false, it's supposed to move on. It moves on to the next line in the code, which says, go to fail.
Right.
It goes, all right. So it always failed. So it means it was always turning it off, huh?
Yeah.
Nice. That's a hard bug to find if you don't know to look for it. I mean, I realize what you just said, but man, that's, you know, if you take it out of context, yeah,
right.
Super
well, the,
obvious.
And the problem is the problem of it is that the code now will never tell you that there's a problem because it's not throwing up any flags or anything.
Yeah, it's not technically wrong. It's doing exactly what you told it to do.
Right, and
I love code. I love code.
Yeah, well, and it's and most importantly, like, you know, errors and stuff. All of those other errors for the go to fail. There's the this is what you do if it fails, but that error also throws up all sorts of flags, and those get logged, and those go places, and so, you know, the operating system's building up a log of, you know, all right, it still worked even though we failed, but hey, it failed. Whereas here, it was just bypassing everything it was supposed to be doing without making any error logs. So the operating system thinks, hey, everything's cool. And it's reporting back to the Apple servers, hey, everything's still cool. And Apple's sitting there thinking, cool, everything's cool. And everybody's getting their certificates that they're supposed to be getting because Apple's handing them out to everybody because it's not actually checking for any, and the only way to discover that there's an error at all is if you, you know, try to snoop. Or if you try to do packet injection and you succeed when you're getting, you know, the SSL certificates and you're like, guys, you say you're doing it, but I know for a fact you're not doing it. And then once you understand that there is a bug, and that's what made this, like, you know, a difficult, but what's really crazy, I guess, is that it affected this is like shared code, I guess. I don't even really understand how this happened. But I guess it's like not only was it on iOS, which is now fixed in 7.0.6, but it's also affecting Safari for OS X. So they're like, if you need to do banking or anything, use Chrome. So it was just like it was a widespread, you know, but it's a relatively simple bug. But, you know, just that's a bummer. And the really important thing here, and the reason why it's important to do this over a secure connection like your home Wi-Fi is because it's very possible. This is, you know, those types of updates are supposed to be done over secure socket layers. So all of those updates are supposed to be protected so somebody can't inject code as you're doing this. As in a hypothetical way, somebody who's eavesdropping could see you connect to Apple servers, see you trying to download the update, tell the iPhone, hey, that's the wrong server, point you to their server, which has another update called 7.0.6, which doesn't fix it, and now your phone thinks it's fixed, thinks it has the update, and doesn't. So I
gotta ask this because I honestly don't know. I mean, that sounds like a bunch of doom and gloom, but how often does something like that happen where someone's phone gets hacked in that regard?
In this sort of a case, not very at all. But the problem is, and the reason why this kind of stuff is in general important is because that is like the number one, you know, trick for. Really, if you're talking like, from what I, you know, I'm not a super security expert. I'm more of a, I know just enough to get dangerous. But I know that, like, when you're talking about really serious viruses and worms and stuff that are using some sort of an exploit to get into your system, If you're sophisticated enough to know what's going on the base operating system in order to get in, oftentimes the first thing you do once you've infected, you know, your virus, once it infects a system, first thing it does is it goes in and patches it, and then it tells all the antivirus software that, hey, there's not a virus, there's not a problem here. You know, and that's pretty, you know, this is a, it, it's, I guess the question is how long did the bad guys know that this was a vulnerability before the good guys fixed it? If the good guys found it first, they'd have no time to respond to it. But if the bad guys have been working on this for, you know, a couple of months, it'd be very, very easy to set up shop in, you know, Starbucks is around the country and take over a couple hundred iPhones, you know, a day. And to put those sorts of things in there. That's not a very
some dude thought he was like some brilliant hacker. Yeah, it turns out he wasn't. But
yeah.
Man, I've been totally getting in. I figured out this vulnerability. I've been working on it for weeks. Yeah, it turns out it's good. So how long has that been the case? You know, do they know, like, was that with 7.0 or has that been around for a while?
I haven't read. I think it was 7.0, but I haven't. Okay. I'm not sure when it really surfaced, but
interesting.
Yeah, I think so.
Happens to the best of them.
Exactly.
I'll update, I guess.
I just got done. That's how long it took me. Now, granted, my internet's a little bit faster than yours, but
yeah, I'm not doing it now.
But I mean, that's how small of an update it is. It took the length of the story to get it done.
Or we talk really long. One of the two.
Good point.
Oh man. So,
let's talk about the big one.
Okay.
The big one.
So.
Mm.
You were gone last week.
Mhm.
You were in España?
Sí, señor.
Right?
Yeah,
Bilbao. How do you spell that?
B-I-L-B-A-O. Okay. Bilbao.
That's cool. And you were there for work, and that was awesome.
Yeah, it was
Did you have any opportunities while you were there to just kind of enjoy the local scenes and
meet
the local folks?
I mean, Spain's really cool because they've got a crazy nightlife. And Bilbao is part of Basque Country.
Yeah, which like starts at like 9 o'clock, doesn't it? I mean, it's like...
Yeah, well,
we always joke about eating on the Spanish schedule when we eat after 9 o'clock.
Right, and Spain is in dire straits right now because like people, you know, take siestas and they sleep in the middle of the day and they all get a little bit liquor, you know, they get a little wind up at lunch and then they go and they, you know, and nobody works really hard most of Spain, but the thing is that you know, Spain's not dead. There are communities in Spain that actually work really hard, and one of those communities, one of the big parts, is the northern Spain or the Basque Country. And by and large, it is what remains of the economic engine of Spain, which is why they want to declare independence from the rest of Spain. And they're really serious about it, and the rest of Spain's really serious about not letting them because they're what remains of the economic engine of Spain. But one of the things that they do that's unique to Spain is they actually work 8 hours a day, and they don't really take
siestas. Oh, that's crazy talk. Who does that anymore?
We did
the Jetson era where we just hit a button one day a week and we call it good.
The rest of Spain is they actually engage in things like manufacturing and engineering and development. It's a pretty cool part of the town, but the thing is that there's still
Spanish. I can see why you decided to visit there then.
It's true. The thing is that they're still Spanish and they still party like maniacs. And it was a Monday night and we were out at like, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night at the bars, and the bars were still full. And we're drinking cervezas, eating pinchos, and hanging out with chicas. I mean, it was like, you know, it was ridiculous. but it was fun. It was really cool. And while I was there, you know, met a lot of guys, but also met a lot of chicas, which is cool. And
It's cool. Because I'm single. So chicas are good. I gotcha.
How you doing? And I'm Yeah. And one of the girls that we met while we were there, we were trying to hang out with and coordinate with. And
you said we.
Yeah, I was there with a coworker. And my age, kind of same temperament, so it was a good match for what we were doing there. And so we're trying to hang out with her, and she goes, you know, we're like, you know, Facebook, yeah, well, you know, we'll connect to her Facebook, and she goes, are you on what? Do you have WhatsApp? And I was like, I've heard WhatsApp, and I know people that use WhatsApp, but I've always been kind of like, because one of the things that I know that's true about it is that it's and this is also you need to understand that I was in a Wi-Fi shadow for the entire time I was there. I had probably about and like 3 hours combined Wi-Fi access, internet access.
Oh, you poor
I was
child.
In Spain. Well, you know, it's not too bad. I was busy. I was having fun. It was good. But the thing
is not too bad at all.
I was like, yeah, I was in a complete, like, I had no clue what was going on in the tech world. Like, any big stories? I didn't know. I was just like, I'll catch up with this weekend.
Well, what day of the week was this on when this was happening?
This is literally Wednesday morning that I'm having this conversation. And I'm talking with her, and I'm familiar with WhatsApp because, number one, I know it's huge. It's got a giant user base, mostly European, you know, like the Ruskies, the Europeans, Eastern Europeans, they use it like mad. And basically, what I'd always been told is it was a free text messaging app. And I was like, a free text messaging app? So it's just Google Messenger or Facebook Messenger or iMessages or all works over Wi-Fi? Yeah, big deal. I still don't have any internet when I'm in Spain. Like, how is this supposed to help me? And now it's a little bit more sophisticated than that, and I should have actually looked into it because it would have been useful given during certain times. But it still requires, like, phone access, and that's, like, what I don't have, and it's the reason I'm moving over to T-Mobile. So, but what's cool about it is it's multi-platform. So, you know, unlike iMessages, which I think is a great solution if you have an iPhone for this dilemma, it works on any things other than iPhones. It'd be nice if Google would integrate their, you know, their text messaging app with Google Messages, make it one thing, sort of like they did with iMessages. But then, you know, Google Messages works on my phone. That would be cool. And, you know, Facebook, they kind of existed somewhere too. And that was actually the tool that we used to communicate with her, was Facebook messaging. But as a result, I ended up downloading WhatsApp and checking it out and playing with it for the day and trying
it's
to
like
use that as well.
Prescription, isn't it?
What?
Isn't it like a buck a year prescription or something? Like
it's
that?
Free for the first year.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, so it's the, you know, they like to, you know, hook you in.
They hook
you.
Yeah.
But, you know, $1 a year is not bad.
Take a bite.
Yeah, $1 a year is not bad, especially when you have 400
reasonable.
When you have 450 million users, you know, I mean, you don't have to make a lot of money, you know, in advertising revenues in order to justify, you know, or selling people's data in order to justify keeping that kind of an operation around. You know, if you can spend less than $400 million a year, that's still a pretty good revenue stream. So, you know, it's a cool company, cool app. And I know that people were concerned because obviously Facebook's, you know, one of their, as we're talking about this, obviously we used Facebook to communicate. The importance of this is that's what Americans do oftentimes, but that's not what Europeans have been doing. They've been using WhatsApp, which – so I decided like – so what was it? We talked on Thursday when I got back, or was it Friday? And I've still like not had any time.
Friday.
Right. I've been really sick. I got super sick on the plane ride home. I've been like completely out of it. I went into work on Friday and I shouldn't have because I was still sick and just was like focused on work and wasn't goofing off and reading tech and anything. So I am still completely unaware of anything that's going on. And you're like, by the way, I've got like 29 articles about WhatsApp, so I got to pare it down, but I got WhatsApp covered. And I was like, What happened with WhatsApp? I just downloaded it for the first time. Like, what?
Nice.
I'm just like, yeah. And by the way, I at this point, I said that right out, like right there. I was like, what happened with WhatsApp?
I know.
And you were like, I'm not going to tell you. We're going to save it for the show. And I was like, no. I have no idea. I have like no clue what happened. And he goes, oh. You're like, Facebook bought it for like $19 million. And I was like,
billion.
No. I know. But you said $19 million. And I was sitting there thinking like, oh, that's weird. $19 million. That sounds like not a lot. I mean, like, why are we even talking about $19 million? Like, and furthermore, I thought WhatsApp was like huge. Like, weird. Okay. I didn't even think about it. Until I actually saw the articles. And then I realized we were off by a couple orders of magnitude. So that's enormous.
Yeah, so Facebook, in case you haven't picked up on that yet, has bought, or is going to, probably, WhatsApp. And so they're based out of one of those towns, cities, where you live, Palo Alto. There we go. I knew I'd get it. They're based out of Palo Alto. And, you know, whereas Facebook is in Menlo Park, they're close to each other, really.
Yeah, it's like you can literally get there in 20 minutes in traffic.
Yeah, they're pretty close. So, yeah, so they're buying them with $16 billion, including $4 billion in cash and approximately $12 billion in Facebook shares.
Yay.
With an additional $3 billion in restricted stock units to be granted to the founders and employees that will vest over 4 years. Which, by the way, they did the math and they said that the beginning employees owned 1% of WhatsApp. Comes out to about $160 million if you take 1% of 16 bills. That's not bad. That's approximately the same as whoever that guy won the lottery in California after the taxes will have.
That's a solid, you won the lottery.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want with your life.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. So, yeah, like you said, they've got over 450 million people using the service. 70% of them are active daily, which is a pretty good ratio. Their messaging volume is approaching the total global SMS volume, and they're adding about 1 million people a day.
Yeah, those are pretty astounding numbers.
Those are good numbers.
I'm going to say, I can understand why Facebook was freaked out by that. Sorry.
Well, I saw this chart. Do I still have it? I may have gotten rid of it. It's not in that one. But it was here it is. Okay. It was on TechCrunch, why Facebook dropped 19 bills on WhatsApp. The first one was exactly what you said. It's huge in emerging markets and in Europe. The usage numbers are off the chart. But then they also showed this this line chart, which I'm a fan of, where they've showed them over the last 4 years their growth, you know?
Yeah.
And what it shows is that looks like Gmail had a pretty early lead. You know, they were strong and they looks like they have been growing consistently. And WhatsApp really came on board, it looks like, in 2009 is what it looks like. So pretty early on, they were, and it looks like to me, like number two out of the gate of these apps that are in it. And then there was Twitter and Skype, and then Facebook as well. And what it showed was that what was it now? I got to do the math here. 3 years ago, WhatsApp surpassed Gmail as the biggest IM text replacement app, however you want to think about it. And then a year ago, they were big. They were you know, they were twice as big as Facebook's, I think maybe even more than that. But then looking at today, where again, they're at like 450 million users. Facebook's at like 145 in the second position.
Yeah.
They're significantly bigger. They're running away with it is what they're doing.
Right.
And that's just the kind of thing where, yeah, Facebook was like, all right, we gotta do something about this. And so they bought them. So clearly buying on a growth trajectory there, which is interesting. Some interesting tidbits about the company, which I like about them, is that they did a lot of things that seemed opposite of what most companies would do.
Yeah.
And so like one of the things is that they were like very much like heads down. And what was one of them? They said they focused on simplicity, which apparently their app is pretty simple. Can you corroborate that? Pretty simple app.
Yeah, very simple.
Yeah. And they wanted to grow naturally and sustainably. They wanted to avoid advertising at all cost, and perhaps most interestingly, they didn't want press.
Yeah, which I think is weird.
Which, by the way, they got, and so they went down for like 5 hours.
Yeah.
So one of those things where it was like, I forget where they said it. They were like, you know, marketing and press kick up dust. It gets in your eye, and then you're not focusing on your product anymore, which I thought was interesting. So they were building apps for like Nokias and Blackberries because that's where their users were. They were just kind of ignoring the Galaxy Gear or Google Glass. They didn't care about those. And then I love this part here. They were so anti-distraction that they refused to even put up a company sign. One of the founders goes, I can't see a reason for there being a sign. It's an ego boost. We all know where we work.
Yeah,
you're just like, you know, nice.
Compelling.
But I thought one of the interesting things that they said about that was, again, their whole they didn't want to have press. They were like, if your product is where it needs to be, you won't need much press or any to grow into something worth, you know, $19 million. Said the press can help add fuel to a fire. And he goes, but a lot of times entrepreneurs cross a line and end up getting nothing more than burned by that fire. Said it's much better it's a much better approach to, I can say this. It's a much better approach to grow silently until the press aren't needed to fuel your flame, but rather have to show up at the site of a huge forest fire, unaware of how it started.
Which is, you know, I mean, that's an accurate way of saying it. I mean, it's funny, you know, it's like I don't even think we've ever talked about WhatsApp, which is kind of embarrassing because I've been very aware of WhatsApp for the last year because I keep going over to England and everybody uses it. And everybody keeps telling me to use it. I'm like, none of my friends use it. It's like I downloaded BlackBerry Messenger, and guess what? Nobody uses it. So what's the point of me having the app? And that's how I felt about WhatsApp. And so it's like, because the first time I heard about it, I remember the conversation. It was getting ready to go to Cabo last year. So I've known about it for at least 10 months and have been following it and read articles about it and understand it, know what it is. And
you're such a laggard.
I know. I can't believe it. Now it's like, you know, this is why we have the show, so that we can talk about things like these. Matthew, come on, get it together. I know.
You're supposed to pick up on those subtleties,
People
are talking about it. They're trying to get me on it. Maybe there's something here I should investigate it so I can talk about it on a podcast.
I know.
You're saying. So obviously people are talking about, you know, how's Facebook going to handle it because they don't do advertising and Facebook does advertising. And there's discussions around that, which I think they'll figure out. Facebook said they're going to let them run autonomously, like they're letting Instagram run autonomously, which is fine.
Autonomously? I use my air quotes there for those of you who are listening and not watching.
So there's that. But what was interesting about it is there was a writer out there, Benedict Evans, who had some thoughts about it. And his whole thing was like, let's just put some of this into context here, where he was saying that when Facebook bought Instagram for $1 billion, they said they paid approximately 1% of its market value. Okay, because you know now they're publicly traded, we can start to do some math.
Right.
And he says, but with WhatsApp, because of the amount they paid, they're currently paying about 10% of Facebook to buy WhatsApp. And so he goes, so you got to ask the question here, is WhatsApp worth 10% of Facebook? He said that that deal values WhatsApp. Each user is worth about $35 to them, which, fun fact, is about how much Google paid for YouTube in terms of dollars per user.
Yeah.
Which one could argue turned out pretty well. And which I would be one of those people using it right now to argue that. And so, but they said the current market cap of Facebook values each user at about $140 ish. So, you know, which again gets you that 10%. So his whole thing was like, all right, that's an awful lot. I don't care how you look at it. That's an awful lot of money to pay a, you know, percentage of your company to pay for another company.
Right.
And so he starts to pontificate and be like, what are they going for here? What's, you know, what are, yeah, why? What does Facebook see that we don't even see yet? And so he has this, this little, I don't know, blurb, I guess, where he says, mobile social apps are not really about free SMS. Mobile discovery and acquisition is a mess. It's a pre-PageRank phase where we lack the right tools and paths to find and discover content and services effectively. Social apps may well be a major part of this, as he discussed in detail here. These apps have the opportunity to be a third channel in parallel to Google and Facebook. So what did this guy is saying? Is he saying, you know, we used to live in a web where there was no search, or not a very good search, right?
Right.
And so it was this wild west, and you had to find stuff on your own. And then
the advent of web surfing.
Yes, PageRank came along, and they codified how to, you know, what links things together. How do we find stuff? And it revolutionized the World Wide Web, right?
I mean,
huge. Search is huge. And his point is saying, we are at that pre-PageRank phase right now with mobile phones. You know, it's kind of interesting where we've got all these apps that people use all the time, but they don't really talk very well to each other. And, you know, part of it is we have a bunch of really big players who make it a point to try to keep you locked in with what you're doing, whereas back in the day, they weren't huge, and it was all about free sharing, and, you know, they wanted things to mash up and interconnect. Remember, that, like, when APIs were a huge deal? And everyone was talking about the new mashup of this, the new mashup of that, and you know, it's just, you don't hear that anymore.
Right.
And so I was like, so that doesn't exist. But the app stores are not very good. Finding content within your apps is not super easy. He goes, and it is possible, and I honestly don't fully understand it because I haven't used the app and I'm not 100% sure, but he firmly believes that an app like this is actually going to help with content discovery and services going down the future. And that is actually what Facebook is buying today, is the ability to help you find things, which, you know, in turn help out Facebook in the end, in the same way that search helped out Google.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not 100% sure what that looks like, but that's what this guy's talking about. And he's going, that's where he thinks Facebook is headed. And, you know, and so I've, you know, hey, let me pause to see what you think about that.
So I think it's, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think it's that complicated. I don't think it's that. I think we're overthinking it.
Because the other one was mobile devices are very simple and they are single service things. And Facebook was clearly the king of social on the web. They're not the king yet, though they are definitely a contender on mobile. But in order to be king, you can't have this all in, you know, do everything app, which they tried and didn't work very well. And so you got to have a whole bunch of single service. We do this one thing really, really well app. We have a Messenger app. We have Instagram for photos. Now we have another Messenger app. And, you know, but trying to do those things, you know, trying to build out this moat, if you will, or this suite of apps that do one thing really well so that they can try to be king in this space.
Yeah, and I think, you know, my thought, my reaction, my feeling to this is that, you know, it's they weren't going to win. They'd already lost the race, and all they have is value. All they had is money. They didn't have, you know, and one of the things I read a really, really interesting article, and that I read it on Mac Daily News, of course. The reason I'm giving you this full disclosure is because it's biased. It is a biased article, but it is an interesting.
Wait, why would they be biased? Are they biased towards something?
Yeah, sometimes.
Mac Daily News, they're biased towards something?
But there's a and that being said, it was an intriguing principle. And basically what this article was arguing is that a lot of these companies, especially like, you know, a lot of these tech companies in the Silicon Valley, their value is based in future value.
Right.
How much will their IPO be worth? As opposed to how much revenue are they generating with, you know, you know, Google obviously is a standout of they generate a tremendous amount of revenue, but their evaluation, they don't generate nearly as much revenue as Apple, yet their evaluations, you know, per stock is like a crazy high, and their what's that ratio, it's how they kind of standardize what a value of a stock should be. I can't remember what it's called now, but
per share.
Yeah, something like that.
No,
but it's,
I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about. I don't remember the name of it, but
it's, you know, it's the principle of, like, you know, how much
P&E ratio, right?
There we go. Yeah. Your P/E ratio, and the P/E ratio of Google is,
I don't
like
remember what that stands for, but sure.
Neither. It's like out of the ballpark compared to Apple's, and for no good reason. Nobody, like, Apple is a, you know, Apple makes stuff. They are generating revenue. They've got many revenue streams. Google has basically one revenue stream. It's Google Ad Search, and it's revenue through Google ads through search. And which, by the way, okay, a random side note, I was miserable on the flight back. I mean, just the worst headache of my life in a 10.5-hour flight from France to San Francisco. And I regret so much how much pain I was in, because we sat next to one of the most beautiful girls I've ever seen in my entire life. This French chick who works for Google at the Irish offices as one of their, like, you know, marketing people, and she's got a bunch of, like, music clients. I was like, you are the coolest person I've ever met. I want to spend so much time with you. And I never even really got her name. It's awful. It's cool stuff when you travel abroad happens. I recommend everybody go out and get a job that allows you to travel abroad. It's worth it. Distracted myself. But what they were saying, so you've got these companies on one side that are worth something. They generate revenue. And then you got Facebook who generate revenue, but it's not a lot. And there's concerns about their long-term future and stuff at this point. But a lot of their value and where people were making tons of money and why so many people invested in them had a lot to do with what their IPO was going to be worth, what their future value was worth, what their growth rates were, stuff like that. That's where there's a real opportunity to make a ton of money. And basically it's like what Facebook did just now is they took their stock, which is worth, you know, obviously it has a certain dollar amount to it, but it's worth a certain amount of cachet of future, you know, future worth and current earnings and future growth potential and stuff like that. They traded that stock. They gave that stock to WhatsApp, and then WhatsApp gave all of their stock to Facebook. And Facebook all of a sudden got this inject in this infusion of potential growth. And that is worth something. But it's a bit of a shell game because it's like none of all y'all are actually generating that much money on your own. What are you doing? There's a concern, there's a growing concern that I've read, and it's, you know, and I don't know if this is just like, you know, random investors that don't know anything, but I think it's an intriguing idea that guys like Zuck and especially the unholy marriage that's being of money that's being born between these massive, gigantic internet tech companies and the massive, giant investment bank in Wall Street. And they're getting together and they're mingling and they're coming up with these crazy, complicated idea, you know, like deals where we're going to do this with this stock and this stock's with this much. And they, you know, they're trading a bunch of numbers around really, really quickly. And it's all based on how much growth is going right now. And as soon as the growth starts to slow, what do? We're going to grab something else that's growing and we're going to use that to infuse it. And the question that this investor was asking was like, are these companies just going to keep growing and growing and growing and absorbing things that slow their growth, sometimes almost immediately as soon as they get absorbed? You know, it's like Google, or I said Germany, I guess, saw like the WhatsApp in Germany saw a massive decrease in usage in the last 3 days since the acquisition was announced. People are already saying, no, there's privacy concerns. We don't use Facebook because we don't like Facebook. That's why we use WhatsApp. And so now they're going somewhere else. You know, I think a lot of people...
Well, and we'll see if that lasts or not, of course, initial reaction.
Right, and I think a lot of people are going to be oblivious to it. That's why they keep the, you know, quote, autonomous, you know, existence so that you're not really aware it's Facebook. You know, I know a lot of people who still don't know that YouTube is owned by Google. But you've got, you know, but this question of is this deal, you know, is this deal may not be about good technology. You know, one of the things I've always advocated liking Facebook is because I think they're really big advocates of good engineering and good technology. And if you can build good technology, you can do good engineering, and you can find products that people want, you're going to have you're going to be successful. You can, you know, chase it down. But lately, at least what the media seems to be concerned about is you know, these gigantic deals that Facebook keeps trying to, you know, put together. And that's where they're trying to get their growth to come from, catching people that are already rocketing, that are on their way to a massive IPO, catching them before they do and bringing them into the fold. And that actually, you know, long term, that could be a, you know, that could be signs of disaster, whereas Google and Apple are really focused on building something new. And, you know, finding growth where nobody else has growth. And, you know, and even Microsoft, they're not doing a great job at it, but even Microsoft, that's what Microsoft's doing. They're not acquiring as much as Facebook, whereas Facebook seems very much in this acquisition mode and their stock's doing well because, you know, companies they've acquired have done well. So I don't know. It's one of those things where I wonder if it's just we're overthinking this one too much. It's WhatsApp said this is what our IPO is going to be worth. Beat that number or you're never going to own us. And Facebook said this is what we're willing to beat it by. They negotiated it down to what everybody thought was, you know, reasonable. And, you know, a couple of owners became billionaires overnight, and they were going to become billionaires no matter what. And, you know, and Facebook needed it more, needed to, you know, I don't know. Facebook, you know, that's the only thing I can think that happened. That's the only thing that makes sense to me that happened after reading everything.
I really just feel like you're just jealous. and you're just kind of lashing out here.
I don't see that.
I'm harassing you, by the way. Harassing you.
Thank you.
But you're getting riled up. You're getting riled up here.
I understand. I do wonder, like, I've read quite a few, and I feel like there's a lot of people that are saying, man, what does Facebook see that we don't? And maybe they do, but oftentimes that's just you're overthinking it too much. There's a real simple thing here, is they overpaid for what it is, which is potential growth. That's it. You know,
all right.
Cool. And, you know,
time will tell.
I know.
Will tell.
Exactly.
Yeah. In the meantime,
speaking of things that can't possibly work for financial reasons, so there's a big research paper that was published, and an article that I read based on that research. Was talking about, and I thought this was interesting, basically the fact that streaming services like Pandora, Spotify, and that one that starts with an R that nobody uses, I can't remember the name.
Ardio?
What? Yeah, thank you. No, Rhapsody.
Oh.
That was the other one. But yeah, that one too. Basically, so these subscription-based, like, you don't buy the music, you just kind of get the music somehow, so magically, it's either, you know, internet radio or whatever. the report came out, and they basically said they're intrinsically unprofitable. Unprofitable is the conclusion the report came to.
Intrinsically unprofitable.
Yeah, which is not what you want somebody to describe your business model as. And basically what it said is that, you know,
I thought those guys were making money. I don't understand.
We'll get into it. So subscription services are expected to more than double by 2017. Good news for them. Lots of growth. But, and this is what they said, because the services pay 60 to 70% of the revenue to record labels and artists, and the entire sector is intrinsically unprofitable. Blah, 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 blah. We'll get into – so, music – to answer your question, I was going to get to it eventually, but I'll skip ahead.
Okay.
This article basically says music subscription services providers are all losing money, and that is going to remain the case until they find a way to monetize a worldwide user base, the report states. Putting to one side the quality of the actual service, which most users would rate very highly, the facts show that Pandora, when viewed objectively as a business, is in dire straits, the report stated. We are at a loss to know why the company's stock has performed so well, especially over the last 12 months. Ooh. Over the past year, Pandora's stock price has jumped from $11.48 to $37.95. And they're basically saying that, from 2013 to 2017, the total revenue, earned by all record companies worldwide will increase from 16.7 to 17.2 billion or 3.2%. Yet revenues from physical formats will fall by 20.9 billion and revenue from digital downloads will fall by 663 million. Revenues generated from performances and synchronized rights will increase, but only 322 million.
I don't understand. That Pandora made money last year.
How much? Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a lot, but.
How much money did they make?
Oh, maybe not last year. All right, well, let's see here. Last 3 months. Oh, this has got to be old. 2011? Where's my new stuff? Okay, let's switch over to annual. 12 months ending 2011. Huh. Well, this seems old. I guess they lost money in 2011, but they lost a lot less. But the quarterly stuff, they actually made money in the most previous quarter I have, but it's looks like it's old.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what that means.
Yeah. I don't, you know, unfortunately I got, I, you know, the, I, I'm kind of basing this off of, Digital Music Subscription Services 2013 Worldwide Market Analysis and Forecast. So I did not do these numbers myself, and unfortunately, I didn't really, now I'm shooting. It's supposed to be an interesting, intriguing article that's supposed to be alarming to everybody, James. You're not supposed to shoot holes in it. just kidding. One of the things that they basically get into here is that in order for these companies to really monetize what they're going to do, and it's funny, they keep changing up their, their terms of service and stuff, expanding beyond 40 hours for people and things, and more competition is forcing these companies to get, better and better deals and better services going on. It's like the fact that, now for free, Pandora has unlimited streaming because they had to. Apple was going to do it. I think what's interesting, one of the things that this article talks about is that they're basically going to have to come up with different ways of monetizing people. Number one, selling user data, just like, do data mining on their user base. What kind of music do you like? And then selling that. And one of the things that came out of this is actually the fact, I don't know if you heard about it, but there's suggestions that
I found the most recent stuff. Yeah, yeah. They're in trouble.
Yeah. So, good times. Thank you. I'm worried. I'm like, geez.
I'll take you on a slight detour here. So they have probably not released it for this year yet, but for last year or in 2012, so they reported it in 2013.
Yeah.
They lost, let's see here, what are we in? Numbers are in thousands. So they lost $38 million.
That's a lot of millions.
Which is a lot. Quarterly data, the month heading up to October. And again, my guess is that if we did this show in like 2 weeks, they'd have it for this year or for last year. But they lost $1.7 million, which is actually doing a little bit better. The problem, though, is when July, where they lost 7.7, and then in April, where it was 28.5. So, anyways, they're, again, 2 years ago, they lost $38 million. And looking at their balance sheet here, they got a lot of assets. They've got $218 million. And just in terms of cash sitting around, they've got short-term stuff, they've got almost $200 million. So, I mean,
they got a while.
They conceivably, if they were on that same run rate, which I'm sure it goes up and down, they've got 4 years before it's a big problem.
Well,
I can see where.
And one of the things that they talk about is that there's definitely a roadmap to profitability, a theoretical one at least. But they're basically saying you'd have to sell more and more stuff. Like, for example, I heard this week talk about the idea that Pandora wants to work with politicians and basically sell user data and say, we can tell you how people vote based on what music they're listening to. So
wow.
Pay for ads through us, and based on people's music stations, we'll tell you, we'll give you people who will actually vote for you. Or, we'll give you people who are on the fence, independents who could go one way or the other, and stuff like that. So really bump up, the that sort of thing. But the other thing that they talked about is that bundling with mobile deals is one of the areas that people think is a possible one. And I'm not exactly sure what that looks like. I don't really get into it. But I'm assuming that means that, like, AT&T will basically pay for, part of the subscription, and you'll get, if you're on AT&T and you get a special, you get text messaging, phone calls, data, and music streaming, and that'll be tethered to some sort of a service or something. Or they say, and then they said the last and the really big one, which probably will be the route that companies like Pandora will go, is get bought by somebody else who can afford a department that loses money but brings in a lot of users.
Microsoft.
Yeah.
Microsoft.
And they're because basically what their argument is, what this report's argument is that iTunes Radio loses money, but Apple doesn't care. They can afford to lose money, or it doesn't need, you know, it doesn't need to make money, because what they look at it is as they look at me as the ultimate success stories. I've spent probably $40 on iTunes in new music since they launched iTunes Radio, which I don't exactly know how that happened. Well, I know exactly how that happened. You do it $1 at a time. It's just a dollar. But as music, you know, and that's something that really and truly, you know, iTunes was getting the benefit of Pandora doing the legwork for that, you know, all along. Pandora was doing the music discovery, and then I would click on buy from iTunes, and Apple would make all the profits from there. You know, iTunes looks at those two products as a single service, a single product, and even though one's dragging it down, it boosts the sales in the other, and as a whole, the whole thing goes up. You know, and then on top of it, you know, they've got iTunes Match, which can kind of, you know, really balance out the how much you cost them and how much you're worth and everything.
Which, by the way, I just wanted to double check on this. With iTunes Match, it means that you don't have to store your songs on your iPhone.
Yes.
It'll temporarily store them unless you say otherwise. Or
what it does is it shows your entire library of songs you've uploaded, you've either purchased or uploaded to their servers, and you can stream them from the servers. You can download them to your phone, either way. So if you've got unlimited data, there's no reason to use any space on your phone.
Unless you're traveling and you need it. Okay.
Right.
And how much was that again?
It's $25 a year.
Okay.
I like it. I think it's a great service. I've been using it, and you get no ads on the iTunes Radio, which I really, really dig. And I got to be honest, like, I'm pretty lucky if I get like one band a year before they become popular, or I get like two or three songs a year, like I catch somehow before they get popular and they get on the radio, and I'm like, yeah, I'm totally hip. I know music. I feel great about myself. This year, I'm on like my 17th song, thanks to iTunes Radio, that I'm like, I caught before it got popular, because they're just, you know, whatever their curation process is, they're good at picking songs. But I guess iTunes Radio is doing terrible. I was reading, I've not read much about how it's doing, because Apple kind of keeps it hush hush, but I guess it's not doing very well, which I'm just like, how did you mess that up? It's a great service. It's really good. But I don't know. You know, it says the guy that, you know, has an iPhone, an iPad, an iMac, or a Mac, an Apple TV. I think it's a great service. I don't know what the rest of you are complaining about. I think it's an interesting question to me here, because it's one of those things where, like, you know, you think about these companies as something where they're, well, they're still just trying to get, you know, everything balanced and everything, and they're spending all this money for growth, and that's their problem. And yeah, well, they are spending money on growth, and that is part of the problem. But this report really does, you know, illustrate that even for companies like, you know, for all of them, there's a really big issue here, which is that most of their money they never get to touch. It just, you know, comes in the front door and leaves, never even comes in the front door. It comes in one truck and leaves at the other truck. You know, its way to the guys who own the product. And they're not taking a big enough cut to afford how much it costs to operate the service. And you know, what do you do about that? I don't know. And but clearly that's the way it's all going. I mean, I'm an anachronism in that I own music. And I'm, you know,
I own music. Does that make me weird?
Yeah, we both are. It's better to say.
I feel weird.
I know. Do you still actively buy music?
Yeah. Well, That's a tricky one. Active's a weird word. I maybe buy, you know, spend $20 a year on music, maybe.
Yeah, and see, I think, and that's the other thing, is I think that I do think I'm an anachronism in that I spend probably, I don't know, I probably spend $10, $20 a month on music a year.
Yeah, that's
month.
A lot.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean,
it's a lot.
It's a lot unless you think about it like 5 years ago or 10 years ago. You know, when you had to buy a single, when you had to buy, like, think back to when we were in high school. And if you wanted new music, you had to buy an album. You'd spend $20 on an album. You buy two albums a month. You know, people were buying, like, you think about, like, those deals where they had, like, you know, you could buy, like, seven albums at a time and you'd, like, sign up for a thing and you'd just kind of get all these different, everybody had albums, you know, for days, just albums and albums and albums because it was the only way to, like, distribute music and they're trying to figure out ways to bring down the cost and everything. And then, you know, and then the internet happened and completely turned that model upside down.
Napster.
Exactly. And ever since then, you know, people have been trying to get away from that. You know, my thing is that I, you know, I actually value having, you know, having the rights to it. I think it's super annoying when I try to listen to a song and I can't because, you know, it's not available on X, Y, and Z service. Like, oh my God, are you kidding me? And I'm afraid that 20 years from now, when I want to go back and listen to that song that was really cool, it won't be available on whatever service I want. And, you know, maybe I'll be wrong and I'll have wasted all this money and I'll do mathematic calculations and figure out how much it would have been worth if I had invested in it. But hopefully I'll be able to appreciate the enjoyment I got out of the music anyways. I don't know. It's an interesting dilemma that they're going to face. And I think what it means is that companies like Google and Facebook or Google and Apple are going to win long term. And they don't need to worry about Pandora because if they don't buy Pandora, Pandora doesn't have much of an option. But it's also like if Comcast or AT&T or Verizon or somebody wants to get into that part of the game, they're a perfect buyout option because they can bundle them in them with, you know, other crazy services. Or Samsung, you know, could start eyeballing these different services and say, yeah, you want that cool Spotify service that you really liked? Can't have it on your iPhone anymore. Got to get a Tizen-based, you know, Samsung phone or whatever. Oh. I think that's just something to pay attention to in the next – unless anything changes in the next 3 years, those – you know, unless they figure out a cool new revenue model, in the next 4 years, that's what you have to look forward to for all of those companies is they're going to get bought by somebody else and they're going to become part of a bigger product, you know – offering by somebody else.
And, yeah, I can. All right. Keep our eyes out for it.
Exactly.
In the meantime, so when are you moving to Portland?
I'm not moving to Portland.
What? Why not?
It's rough because I don't have to move to Portland and I don't have to quit my job in order to get what I want. It's
you might
killing
have
me,
to.
Man. Why?
Well, because San Jose may not get it.
What? It's on the list.
Well, yeah, it's on a list to be considered.
Oh, yeah.
So what we're talking about is Google Fiber, and they've released, 34 new cities that they are considering bringing Google Fiber to.
Oh, explore. Don't get too excited yet. Oh, I was too excited.
You were. Portland's on a list, man. I hope Portland gets it and San Jose doesn't. It's just really bug you. Not that it
actually
means-
no. I would actually I think I emotionally prefer that because I'm not in San Jose, or rather it's not coming to San Jose.
Ah.
It's coming to Santa Clara. It's coming to Sunnyvale. It's coming to Mountain View. And Palo Alto are the four, like, large areas, which, guess what? That's where all the Google employees live.
Shocker.
I know. And which is why I think it'll come. I think if they can, they will. I mean, it's you know, and it's just such a – it. How could you not bring it to the heart of the Silicon Valley? I mean, come on now.
Costs, like, a lot of money.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. And Comcast has like an iron, you know, grip on this area. I don't think they want to give it up if they can. But that would, that's the only nice part is that like, is that a lot of times as soon as Google Fiber comes in, all the competing, you know, all the competition decides, oh, I guess we should up our game. But yeah, it just drives me nuts. I'm going to be right outside of the, it's actually, it's terrible. I'm like 5 blocks away from being involved in all these really, really cool services that are cropping up for the Silicon Valley, Bay Area, like Google Deliveries was one of them. There's a couple of like just social apps that are like designed to be like your, you know, I can't remember what the word is. That's what's it called? Sosh. It's your go away.
What?
It's called Sosh, and it's basically like it's supposed to help you find like restaurants and music and nightlife and stuff, and it's supposed to be like for your area, and I'm like a half a mile from it being included in my area, which is okay. I mean, I can still use it because I can drive there nicely. But like, there's all these cool services that are cropping up that are like, they serve right up to like where I live. I'm like, oh, why do I live here? Come on now. Like,
just a tease.
I know, it's terrible. Like, I work for a silicon manufacturing company. We're part of the Silicon Valley. We are what defined it as that. You can't just, oh, man. It's terrible. You know, and I mean, like, and historically, like, we built the tools for the guys that were doing it. It's not just a whatever. So yeah, I mean, they're expanding again, and if it gets really close, it would be really hard for me to not move. I'll be honest. Don't tell my roommate.
All right.
I think it'd freak her out. But it's kind of, this is a new announcement. I haven't told anybody else yet, but I'd have an incredibly hard time not moving if it were, viable option, because that's like the one thing I've wanted to move out to is super fast internet. I don't even know what I would do with it, but I'm sure I'd figure it out.
Figure it out. I understand. There is a company that is actually based in Portland. They created a banking app called Simple. We've talked about them before on the show, where it's you gotta have an iOS device and you could do some cool banking stuff and tracking things with it. I've been interested in signing up for them, except they don't have joint account capabilities yet, and that's kind of a requirement at this stage of my life, and so I haven't been able to sign up for them. But they just got bought by a large company, BBVA. I actually don't know what that stands for. I should probably look it up.
I don't know, but I use ATMs a lot the last week.
Because they're a UK-based company, I believe.
Yeah, I believe they're Spanish, as a matter of fact.
Spanish. I don't know, their website's in a different language. I can't even tell you what language it is.
You just went away. Banco Bilbao. Oh, it is. Look, check this out. It is. It's the Banco Bilbao Vizac Argentina. It's literally the Bank of Bilbao. I stood at their headquarters 3 days ago. This is awesome.
Well, there you go. Very cool. So they're buying them for some money. Let's see, does it matter? Oh, for $15.3 million.
It's a lot of millions of dollars.
No, that was their funding. So they probably bought them for more than that. But doesn't say. Whatever.
Man.
So, but it's cool because they're gonna let them keep running and they're going to keep doing their thing. And now they've got some funding to really scale and grow the business big. So maybe now they'll bring on joint accounts. Make that a priority.
And come on. Get your act together. I like your service. I'll be honest, James. I kind of wonder if it's just the nature of the fact that I pay attention to this stuff or if I just get really lucky. But I feel like I'm constantly in the middle of these sorts of things. And, you know, it might just be confirmation bias. I'm looking for them, and so I see it. But come on. We're standing at their headquarters while they're making this offer, like the day of. Come on. That's crazy, right? That's unique. Oh. You're not impressed.
Just jealous, that's all.
Okay. So you remember Zelda for Nintendo?
Yeah, how could you forget? It's amazing.
I know. So some dude he's got his Oculus Rift because he's awesome. I'm so buying one of these. It's a matter of when, not if, at this point. He has built a 3D version of the game, using the old graphics, and it's awesome. It's just, it's all 3D and whatnot, and it's just the old game, and you've been like, you just go and play the old game, but in 3D. It's first person this time.
Wait, so the game is in 3D? All right, I've got the video.
I gotta skip ahead a little bit because
it's just talking.
Skip forward a little bit. Skip forward like a third of the way.
Whoa.
Yeah, right?
It's like Doom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. First person Zelda.
Yeah.
This guy has way too much time on his hands.
I know, right?
That looks a ton of fun, though.
I know.
Too bad Nintendo would never get in on that. That soundtrack. Oh,
I know. I love the guys humming on do 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 do. Oh,
that's
yeah.
Cool.
Oculus Rift, guys, come out with A, system requirements, B, a not a dev version, and I'm in. I don't know how.
All right.
But I will.
All right. Good to know.
And then my last article is the consequences of not having a net neutrality. Basically, Comcast has been one of the reasons why Netflix has been struggling to get their speed up is because Comcast is allowing third parties to handle the data and basically cause them to go super slow. They've been through their routing techniques. And Netflix has finally signed a 10-year deal with Comcast that will have Netflix traffic handled directly through Comcast servers. So it'll whip along quickly to your different services. So pretty soon here, everybody who has Comcast and uses Netflix should see a speed boost, quality boost, as time goes on, which is, I guess, yay.
And this is how net neutrality dies.
Yep.
Great. Yeah. Huh. I don't know what to say to that other than frustration.
It's just frustrating.
Netflix, you're a sellout.
Well, but what were they
supposed to do? I get it, but you're a sellout.
What were they supposed to do?
I don't know. Fight.
I'm going to say, but it's not their fight to fight. It's our representatives. It's
frustrating.
It's the job of the politicians, the people who represent us, and this is what they decided that should happen. This is what we, the people, decided should happen, James.
Yeah. Whatever. We need more of those people to listen to this show.
I know. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Comcast right. got away with their extortion.
But you know what? We like slow and steady growth, slow burn. Eventually, people will come check out the forest fire.
Exactly.
How did it get started? We got a strategy.
It's true.
Maybe not be great, but we got a strategy. All right. Cool. And I guess the only last thing that I wanted to talk about, because we got time and I'm feeling it, is I've been getting some feedback that Office 2013 is not very good.
Really?
Which is a shame, because I like it. Or I like the way it looks, or I should say I like Office. And I've kind of wanted to have been switching over to it because it's available to HP employees now for work stuff. And everyone I talked to is like, don't do it. Don't do it. Apparently it's just buggy and they've moved stuff around again and it doesn't make sense yet again. And just a shame. Microsoft's really into this every other year. We're just going to really stink it up, which is what they did with Office 2007.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll be honest. So this is a slightly related case. I've been really trying to get this year. My goal is to get published, which since it's the first, yep. It's the first of at least two book series. It means I need to kind of get a role on the second book as well. So I've been while working on editing the first book and saving for all that's going to have to happen with that one. I've also started writing the second one. And I finally made the emotional decision. I don't know why this was so nerve-wracking to me, but I decided to move off of Microsoft Office, and I've moved over to Pages. And I don't have any plan on ever moving back. I really couldn't care less what they do with Word at this point, at least because there's another option out there. And if you've got an iPad, it's awesome. If you got a Mac, it's awesome. But even if you have a Windows PC, you know, whatever, and you have to use it through Chrome, it's still really, really good. And it's like using, I mean, I sit there and I go, like, it's nice. There are other options out there at this point that I really am to the point where I'm like, it's incredibly expensive to buy a license of Windows that will allow you to, or of Office that will allow you to use, you know, to legally publish things with their services. You're just using them internally. I don't have any idea why you'd pay for Word at this point. I don't have any idea. Mm. There are too many good options. And really and truly, it's like,
I'd agree for Word.
And we keep coming back to the Excel issue. And I just sit there and I go, like, LibreOffice, dude, it's pretty powerful, you know, and if you, you know, and Numbers is not great, but unless you're like, you know, for me, it's fine. It works fine. And I have a couple of friends that actually use it quite a lot. So it's just, it's one of those things where they're killing it. They're just slowly starving it to death. And every once in a while they do this. And I think it just accelerates people like me deciding, you know what? I'll live without it. It's fine. I'll figure some other way out because there are other really good options out there. And it's like I brought my Mac keyboard with my iPad mini onto the plane on the flight there. I wasn't dying of a dread disease. And I wrote for 4.5 hours on the plane comfortably on my iPad, all synced automatically. It's all updated on all my different services. Everything's great. That doesn't cause, you know, no OneDrive garbage. I don't have to buy multiple licenses. You know, you just sit there and you go, like, why would I even try with Windows when, you know, and okay, you don't have a Mac, you got a PC, or you've got, you know, used Google Docs.
You got a Chromebook.
Exactly. Yeah. Google Docs.
Again, for Word, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. No I argument. And I would say Keynote's pretty darn good. PowerPoint's not bad. Keynote's pretty good. And Outlook's a joke. I hate every moment I have to deal with it, but that's that. And then Excel is – it's still hands down better than anything else out there. I mean, for a power user,
I think you're not even close. I think you're a shrinking minority, which is bad news for Microsoft.
A shame. Yeah.
It's basically what the best thing that ever happened to Windows was Vista, or no, to OS X was Vista.
Wow. Right.
You know, because it encouraged people to, you know, and Windows 8, the biggest criticism that people have had was, well, if I have to completely learn a new operating system, I might as well try, you know, look at Chromebooks and look at, you know, OS X. Why not? You know,
I mean, could be a similar thing with Office, unfortunately. But yeah. I wanted it to be great, man. I was all excited when they were showing off the stuff, and it still looks cool. Just from what I understand, the functionality is not quite there, which is a shame. But there it is. All right, man. I'm gonna let you go.
All right, dude.
It's late.
I am.
I'm tired.
Yeah.
So, everybody, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my golden brother is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time. Thank you.